this is Neil Funk, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye.
Hello, this is Nate Friedel, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye. Hi, this is Chuck Swirsky, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye.
I'm Bob Love of the Chicago Bulls, and you listen to Freddie.
Then we go back to Chicago, and I was there for Game 3. And
all right, so here's my question. One second. You were there for Game 3.
Yeah.
Did you boo at the end of the first half?
I did not boo.
I was so pissed. I was so pissed. Oh, my God. you talk about idiocy and how angry you were. We had just split two with the defending champs on the road. We won Game 1. Derek puts up 36 points in his postseason debut. He ties Kareem Abdul-Jabbar for the most points for a rookie in his playoff debut.
Yes.
He adds to that double-figure assist totals. Joakim Noah looks like a man transformed. He's running the break. He's catching alley-oops. We win that game. We lose the shootout in Game 2. We have a bad, admittedly bad first half in Game 3. And, man, I'll never forget. I was watching that game with my father and a friend of his. And the Bulls are going to the locker room at halftime. And the home fans are booing.
Yeah, idiots.
Where did they get the nerve to boo this team at halftime when you just split on the road with the defending champs? Are you out of your mind?
Yeah. So I think before the game, Rose received his Rookie of the Year trophy. And I remember the atmosphere was just awesome for that. And they just did not come out and play well at all. I never boo a player unless I feel he's not giving 100%. That's the only time I'll ever boo a player. I think it's such a waste of calories to boo guy. They're not trying to suck. I don't boo Felicio. I don't understand. He doesn't want to suck. He's terrible. But he's not. It's not like he's lazy. It's not like he's not trying. You know,
boo bad play though, Fred. Like if somebody's just bad, you still could be like disappointed with the play.
Yeah, but I just never understood the concept of standing up going, I never wanted to do it. I never understood it. Like, I didn't find it beneficial. Like, I never, unless the guy was not playing hard, then I would do it.
You wouldn't boo Kirk Heinrich?
Never. No, of course not. I mean, well, maybe I would.
Okay.
Maybe if I was alone in my office watching. I mean, listen, Kirk Heinrich played hard, though. You got to give it to him there. So I would never boo the guy. I was disgusted with his shooting, and I'd want to vomit, but I never, like, wasted the calories to boo him. But Game 3 was a disaster. There's no doubt about it. I remember leaving the place, and everybody was so just disheartened because, you know, people felt for sure that we weren't going to win a game for the remainder of that series. Then Game 4 happens. Why don't you go a little bit into that? Were you guys at the game?
I wasn't at any of these games. No, I'll tell you my Game 4 story. We were watching I was at my parents' condo, and we were watching, and my mom was having a book club coming over, and my mom's a big sports fan. I'm not saying, you know, oh, she doesn't care about the game, but people have other schedules, and she had a book club coming over, but she scheduled it for, you know, whatever, 30 minutes after the game should have been over, or whatever time. Like, it was built in. She was watching with us. So that game goes to overtime. And then the people start coming in. My mom's welcoming everybody. She's putting food out. They're getting their chairs. And my dad and I are like, ugh. And then Ben hits the shot to go to double overtime. And, man, we have never run faster in our lives. Out the door, down the stairs. My parents are on the fourth floor of this building. Ran down the stairs, didn't trust the elevator, ran across the street into a bar, and sat down and watched the double OT. I think, you know, Game 1, amazing, but a surprise. We win by 2. Game 2, another amazing game. Fred, you spelled it out, the problems, you know, with the timeouts. We had this UConn shootout between Gordon and Ray Allen. And we lose by 3. We come home, we get plastered, just blown out. And let's see what the final was. 107-86, it didn't even feel that close. And And now it's like, oh, man, all right, Boston figured us out. Like, that's going to be it. Like you said, it was this feeling, oh, they're not going to win another game. And so the series, in a way, and this is what made it such a cool series and why I think when people watched it and when people think about it, they're like, bereft of any additional context, this was the greatest series of basketball I've ever seen because it kept on stepping up another level. Like, they'd gone to overtime in game one. Now they go to double overtime. Sure. And when Ben hit that shot on the out-of-bounds play, yeah, that was like, okay, the Bulls are here. And we won that game by 3 points. And then it was like, all right, 2-2, here we go.
What's your memories of game four, Big Dave? What's your memories of game four?
You know, game four, I don't have a big memory of game four. My memories were game one and game six. Those are my biggest memories. Because game one, I remember sitting in the basement and watching that game. And the whole time I'm watching, I just had a feeling of, I just wanted us to look competent. That's all I cared about. I didn't think we were winning the series. I just felt like, you know, we're a young team, you know, we're going to have to take our lumps, you know what I'm saying, against these guys who are going to go deep in the playoffs. You know, they're trying to get to another finals. So I just remember watching it, and when Derrick Rose began to go Derrick Rose on everybody, the feeling I had when he hit that and one, I don't know if y'all remember that and one he hit in that fourth quarter, man, when he hit, he got bumped, and he went crazy, started bumping his chest, and almost threw my TV across the bed because I haven't had that feeling in years. You know what I mean? It had been years since I had felt like that, like just sure joy. Not even that Heat series, because I just felt that was a fluke. Like, I didn't even feel like a happiness about it. I'm like, yeah, you know, all right, cool. We won, you know, that's cool, but we weren't supposed to do that. No, they gave us their best, you know, and Derrick Rose showed up, you know what I'm saying, on the biggest game of the season for us. And like you said, Ben Gordon, of course, also. And I just was losing my mind. So that feeling of, oh, man, I'm excited about my team again, came back into my heart. And, of course, game two, the only thing I truly remember about game two is Ben going crazy and Ray going crazy and Vinny Del Negro's father coming out of
the game. Oh, yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Which let me know that Vinny cannot coach. Like, when your own family member comes out, like, I got it, son. They gave me a shirt, you know what I mean? Like
I totally forgot about that. I totally
forgot. Oh, no, I'll never forget that.
Yeah.
I'll never forget it. Because for real, that told me that Vinny wasn't the one. Because I'm like, Dad, go sit down. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got to deal with this. I'm in the playoffs. Like, well, I got to deal with this right now. So, yeah, that didn't go well for him. But game three, you know, was out of my memory. Game four, I would say also. But game four was the Kahuna's game, right? If I'm not mistaken.
That was the Kahuna shot. Yes.
Okay, so I definitely remember that. And I remember the stadium going insane for that. But, Game six, man. Game six.
Wait, whoa. Don't jump past game five.
No, I'm not jumping past game five. I'm not. I'm just talking about the ones that I have deep memories of, and I mentioned game one, and I mentioned game six. I'm just saying the words game six. I'm not going to go into it, but game six, man. Just.
What about you, C-Dub?
It's all a blur. I just remember the biggest memory I took for the whole series is I remember. Dave, where were we at? Were you guys watching these games, or where were we at?
We probably were for game. I remember the blowout game we were.
Okay.
And I don't remember what we were for game four. I don't.
Yeah, for me, the standout. I remember every time. Like I remember us. I remember feeling like if we're in Boston, we're not supposed to win on their home court. And I was always amazed at the fact that we always sort of, like you said, Jack. Sort of just like each game up in a notch. Each team had to, and I don't know. It's hard to explain. As a whole, the whole series means it's like a blur, but it's just like it's a great feeling of just watching great basketball, man. I just remember thinking every time we was in Boston, we were supposed to lose, and we were supposed to lose, we won. And I remember just going nuts every time Big Gordon hit a big shot. and being amazed by Ray Allen hitting all these big shots. And just appreciating basketball to the point where, you know, I wanted the Bulls to win, but I appreciated that series so much. I just appreciated the basketball. And I couldn't believe that was probably the best playoff basketball I ever played was played in the first round.
Yeah, let me jump in really quick because I think it's going to lead into Game 5, which is one of, the biggest memories of this series. And it has to do with Ben Gordon. You know, that year, unfortunately, he had taken the qualifying offer, and it was clear he was going to be an unrestricted free agent. And his future was probably not going to be in Chicago. And I was so angry that whole season. I thought it was really unfair how the guy was treated in Chicago. I'm like, here's a guy that has been nothing but clutch for this team. And clutch is such an underrated trait, and such a trait I admire in my favorite Bulls, Jordan, Kukoc, these guys that had the ability to hit big shots. And, you know, there's some players in the history of the Bulls, and I'm not going to go into it, who I can't even remember hitting one big shot. And this guy did it continually. And then I had so many inane arguments over the 5 years he was in Chicago. He doesn't play defense. How many times I had that stupid comment given to me? You know, he doesn't play defense. Just like a robot from idiot after idiot speaking with about Ben Gordon. And then that series.
We're up to four.
And then that series was like the culmination for me. I just had a feeling of just justification that, especially game 2, 42 points. I mean, you go watch that game. It was insane what that kid did in that game.
Yeah.
Game 4, the big shot. And now we go to game 5. And this, to me, is the highlight of clutch. He was fouled in one of the overtimes. I can't remember if it was the first or second overtime. With the Bulls down 3, I think there are 27 seconds left in Boston. And he stands up to the free throw line, and he has to hit 3 free throws to get this game into another overtime. And I swear to God, I don't think there's a guy on the roster that could have done it in that situation with that crowd just screaming at him. And I'll never forget it.
Yeah,
to me,
you know what it was, Fred? They only played one OT that game.
Okay.
And it was to tie the game. And I'm looking this up, to be fair, but it was to tie the game with 27 seconds left.
Okay, so he tied it up. Right, but he had to make them, right? Or else, you know, they're going
to
lose the game.
He had to make all three, yeah. Boston was up 104-101.
And he hit all three. And I just remember thinking, like, the one time in my basketball career, I was playing in a summer league game, and it was the highlight of probably my career, and I got fouled with no time left, and I had hit 2 free throws, I guess, into overtime. There was nobody in the stands, and I still remember it like it was yesterday, how nervous I was shooting those free throws. And this guy's doing it in front of Boston crowd with Kevin Garnett swearing at him, everybody's screaming at him, and he hit all three. I'll never forget it. And then you contrast that with another player, you know, like Kirk Heinrich, who's beloved with the fan base, who has 2 free throws against Washington in the 2014 playoffs, and he clanks the first one. And he's beloved. And yet Ben Gordon's forgotten. It's an outrage. It's an absolute outrage.
Ben Gordon was so confident. He had this, like, quiet confidence about him. Just like, he's in himself, and you knew that it was almost at the point that you knew you had no doubt about his skills.
Hey, real quick. Quick round table, top of the head. Your favorite singular Ben Gordon moment, not a full game, but your favorite singular moment. I'm going to start the runner, the game winning runner that he hit against the Knicks at Madison Square Garden on Martin Luther King Day to give us a 1-point win. Do you remember that?
Yes.
At the foul line, and then he drove toward the baseline and then floated one up over Jamal Crawford.
That was a weird floater, too. Like, I kind of remember that. It was a really weird-looking floater.
Yep.
And it went all net. How? Like, I remember saying, what? How? Like, no, I remember that. Like,
yeah.
No, I remember that. You know what's in my memory, Dave? Remember this? I think it may have been his first. What's his first game? Maybe the first couple of games. It was an alley-oop. You remember this? I think we was watching the game together or something. And I remember he took off and he dumped it. And I was like, this dude was like 6'4". Dude, he was dunked. Like, yeah, that was the weird thing about it. He would get up on you and dunk on you too. Like cross you and then go dunk.
They had bad door plays for him.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
I
actually think it was that third free throw in that game 5 that he hit. I do, because I remember standing up after the third free throw and just screaming.
That's so good.
And everybody was wondering. I remember everybody running into the room, all my family running into the room to see what was on the TV, and like, what were you screaming for? And I remember saying something like, he hit three free throws. And everybody was like, yeah, this is my wife, right? Who doesn't understand. You're screaming over free throws? You know, I mean, like, she understands what a free throw is and, you know, has no idea how hard that situation was. There's so many of them with that guy. He's so great.
I'll tell you one that stood out for me, and I don't know why I remember this, but I do, but they had played Milwaukee, and I believe it went to overtime. I think the Bulls won the game in overtime, but Michael Redd and Ben Gordon had a ridiculous shootout that game. Like, I want to say Michael Redd had 50 or 54 or something like that, and Ben had like 48. And
yeah, it was 48 is exactly right.
Okay. And it reminded me of watching like Jordan and Ron Harper when they would go at it. You know what I'm saying? And if Mike had 38, Harper had 32. You know what I'm saying? It reminded me of that. I don't know why that stood out in my brain so much, but I remember that game because neither one of them could be stopped. And you remember that was prime Michael Redd time. You know what I'm saying? Like Michael Redd, like that.
I'm looking it up right here. Mike, you're right. Michael Redd had 52.
52. Yeah. 52. Yeah.
I got to jump in here because you saying that, Big Dave, reminded me of two of my favorite Gordon moments. I think it was the 07-08 season, that horrible season. They were playing Denver. And you guys remember who he was going point for point against? You're not going to believe it.
Is that when Ben had, like 9 for 9 from the 3-point?
Oh, 9 for 9 from three.
Okay. I remember that.
Okay.
No. It was another game where he was like a scoring battle, and the Bulls, I think, lost to this team. But do you remember the guy in Denver who went crazy that game?
Was it Carmelo?
J.R. Smith. Do you remember this game?
No.
That game I remember, and then I remember a game against Miami, against Wade, that was insane, where they were battling each other in the his last season, too. One of those two.
Oh, no. No, I was wrong. That was the 9-for-9 game. No, I'm sorry. That was when he was in Detroit. Never mind. My fault.
But that was the good thing about Ben. Like, we had one of those things. Like, you know what I mean? Like, to go against your best player, we had an answer all the time. And that was so rare to find. I mean, he won Sixth Man of the Year as a rookie.
Oh, my God.
You know what I'm saying? And Shinnamon Rookie of the Year, they just were being nice. You know what I'm saying?
And honestly, one of the biggest rumors that happened of him was when he didn't play, was when he had a bad game. Like, was it the series against Washington? Was it Washington?
That was the first playoff series after the when we came back, yeah.
When he shows the, who was that, Scowls? Chose to put Tyson Chandler in the game over Ben Gordon.
Yes, oh God,
instead of
yes.
Ben Gordon. Yes. And I remember thinking like, I don't give a. Remember day I was yelling like, I don't give a goddamn what Ben Gordon shooting.
All right,
you put like, Ben Gordon. He should take the last shot to get out of the. I'll never forget. He's on the bench.
Yes, I remember
Tyson Chandler in the game. Oh, go down by three. And I was like, what the hell is he doing?
And then we turn it over. Like I remember something stupid happening.
Probably Tyson screwed up or something. That whole series was stupid.
The whole series was dumb. You're right. You're right, Jack. Oh, man, you brought back bad memories on that. Oh.
I'll never forget that. I'm like, why is he, like, I don't get it. Like, that just, yeah.
Oh.
But yeah, Ben was amazing. Go ahead, Fred.
So the game that I'm referring to was February 22nd, 2008. They actually won. I was wrong. 135 to 131 against Denver. Gordon had 12 of 18 from the field, 6 of 10 from 3. He had 37 points in 7-8 from the free throw line. How many minutes did he play? 33 minutes. And J.R. Smith had, let's see here, 33 minutes. He was 8 of 14. He had 43 points. 43 wow. points for J.R. Smith off the bench against Ben Gordon, who had 37. So I remember that one. That one sticks out. I thought Denver won that, but the Bulls won it. What a game. Let's get back to the series. So game six. So they lose five.
Game five.
I don't remember game five as well.
we addressed it, but we got to talk about what happened after those free throws. Ben Gordon makes the free throws. Paul Pierce hits a jumper, and the Celtics are up by two. And we ran a play with a lot of guys moving. You know, it was your typical out of bounds play. Everybody stacked up; they're all scattering. And at the last minute, probably like right before the inbounds clock ran out,
Brad Miller's wide open at the top of the key. And they throw it into Brad, and, I mean, not just wide open like there's nobody around him, but he's got an easy run to the basket. So he takes this dribble and these two big steps, and I'm looking at it like it looks like he's not going to dunk, and I'm wondering why is he not going to dunk, but he sort of comes up with like a layup. And I'm like, okay, this is awesome. Like, this is all happening, of course, in a flash of, blink of the eye, but he drives, and Rondo comes out of nowhere and just scrapes his hand across Miller's face. Fred, you remember that?
Yes, now I remember. Absolutely.
And that is when it all just sort of felt evil. Like the series took another turn. So game one was that, like, wow, this is super fun. Oh, cool. We got the champs on their home court. Game two was the shootout. Like, all right, whatever. We got them. They got us. Game three was the blowout where you felt like, oh, man, they figured us out. It's over. Game four was the turn, but sort of had the same mood to it as game one. Like, cool, we did a cool thing. Game five did not feel cool, fun. Game five was... it was right there, and now we just got smacked in the mouth, literally. And Rondo, at that point, was averaging a triple-double with 21 points a game. So all of our attention, I think all the Bulls' attention, I think all the fan attention, everything suddenly coalesced around the idea of Rajon Rondo kind of like the ultimate villain. Yeah. And the person who's beating you, it was everything. Mm-hmm. So when Miller got scraped across the face, he goes down, and I don't remember. I'll have to look it up. I don't remember what exactly. I don't remember exactly what it was. There was some sort of rule loophole that made it so that Rondo was not hit with a flagrant. I guess they said that he went for the ball enough, even though he clearly just scraped Miller across the face. So Miller is down, he's like, his lip is bleeding, and he looks dazed, he looks like he's seeing double, he gets up there, he has to shoot these free throws, he's a good foul shooter. He misses that first free throw, everybody starts screaming, you can see him sort of in this cold sweat, and now you're like, oh my god, I can't believe this has happened. And he misses the next free throw, Boston gets the rebound. Actually, I don't even remember this. I'm looking at the game log, and Pierce then went to the line and missed two. But it was that moment where the series took this next turn, and you went into game six being like, all right, we got to do something about these guys. Like, it's not, obviously we still want to win this series, but we have to win game six. We can't go out like this where they scrape us and they hit us and they beat us. And it's all just going to be cool because we're happy to be here. No. And so that was fueling everything going into game six.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it definitely took a turn of sort of like bullying. Like, it felt like, yeah, this was being picked on a little bit, especially with Garnett on the sideline. It really felt like there was just a bigger bully trying to pick on us. And Rondo definitely did become like the enemy. Some cheap shots throughout the series, doing a lot of things.
And so he goes back to Chicago in game six when Rondo gets into it with Heinrich. Is that in the first quarter, I think, or the second quarter?
It was early.
I don't think it was the first quarter, though.
Might have been the second quarter. It was early. I would say first half for sure.
It was definitely the first half. I'm just trying to remember when that happened. And I know that, to me, kind of brought it up another notch because, the beloved Kirk gets basically thrown into the I think he got thrown into the table, right? I can't remember. I have to watch the video again. But, now we're on a full-fledged almost brawl here. And I just remember that game six, Gordon didn't play well. He got in foul trouble, but from what I recall. And Ray Allen was just insane that game. I think you guys remember.
Yeah, Ray was awesome. Ray went for 51.
Yeah.
And, I mean, everybody at this point now it's like, now the playoff lineups are set. I mean, to look at these minutes for Boston, Ray Allen, 58, Rondo, 57, Big Baby, 53, Paul Pierce, 51, Herc, 44, Scalabrine, 20, Tony Allen, 11, and then there's three other guys who played. And for the Bulls, it was basically just seven guys. Wow. John Salmons played 60 minutes.
My gosh.
Derrick Rose played 59 and a half minutes.
Wow.
Joe, 44. Tyrus, 38. Ben, 31. You're right, he was 4 of 14 at 12 points. Kirk played 43 off the bench. Brad Miller had a great game. He had 23 and 10 in 35 minutes off the bench. Lindsey Hunter got 4, and Aaron Gray and Linton Johnson each had less than a minute. So game six, what I remember is that we now had game one was overtime. Game two was regulation, but sort of felt like overtime because we were trading buckets and Ray hit the winner. Game three was a blowout. Game four was double OT. Game five was OT. I remember when this game went to overtime and they kept going through these OTs. They kept getting to them, not by made shots, but by missed shots.
Yeah.
So let's see here. The end, I mean, so Ben missed a potential game winner at the end of regulation. Pierce missed a game winner at the end of the first overtime. Nobody got a shot off for the second. I remember thinking, like, this is so cliche. I remember being, like, weirdly underwhelmed by game six. And this was also what made the Noah play so incredible, and what made game six so incredible was that the bar at that point was so high that when we got the triple overtime, I was like, yeah, of course they go to three. Like, yeah. And you needed something that was going to be even bigger than everything that came before it. I mean, it's like after the Avengers assemble, well, what do you do for a sequel? What do you do for a third movie? What do you do for a fourth movie? Like, you have to keep going bigger. And then as that third overtime really, really was underway, and then obviously the Noah play, I was just like, this series is unlike anything I've ever seen. The 93 finals is better.
Right.
You know, you could say that the 91 East finals is better in the sense that that's iconic, you're changing history, blah, 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 blah. You take everything else away. I would buy a DVD of this first round series, like a box set DVD, for sure.
Dave,
go ahead. And that Noah Steele, and I'll tell you this, I was in the same bar for a couple late season games for the Bulls, and it was like pretty empty watching it. I was in this bar for game five, and I would say it was like mid. And then two nights later, whatever it was, you couldn't get a seat. That was how fast this team caught on in Chicago.
That's an awesome feeling too.
Yeah.
It really is. I also wanted to say, before I spoke on game six, I wanted to say something also about Rondo. Because Chris will tell you, I've been a Rondo fan since his first year. And for me, this was the breakout for Rajon Rondo. Because it was on him without people really knowing it was on him. You know what I mean? Like, you got Kevin Garnett, he's out. You're going up against Derrick Rose. Nobody thinks you got a chance at all. And, I mean, he thrived in that situation. Like you said, he averaged what? He was like 9.6 rebounds away, like 0.4 rebounds away from averaging a triple double in that whole first round. And whatever Derrick Rose did, he matched it every single time. Whatever Derrick Rose did even game one, like he was going head up with him, and it was just great to watch, man. For me, that was the beginning of Rajon Rondo. That's when he put himself on the map, like, no, man, I'm a point guard in this league, and I need to be taken seriously. So I enjoyed watching him that entire seven games. The stuff he was doing on the court, man, I was just very enjoyable. Very enjoyable. Even the fight. I'm like, you know what I'm saying? I was like, wow, I just like it.
Let me read you this. This is him, games 1 through 7. 29-9-7, 19-12-16, 20-11-6. Oh, by the way, 5 steals in each of those last two games. 25-11-11, 28-8-11. Game 6, kind of bad, 8-9, and 19 assists. I mean, he was unreal.
Unreal out there, man. Now, it was the emergence of Rajon Rondo, because I believe that was his third year in the league. So
it was definitely the emergence of my respect for him, because you always liked him more than I did. I didn't dislike him, but you definitely did like him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And when I saw him match Derrick Rose, and I was like, wow, he could score by shooting a jump shot.
Right.
Or the game without scoring.
Right.
He was something, man. And, I mean, he shot, 44? I'm looking at it now. He shot 44% from the three-point line in that series.
Wow.
like Rondo, I mean, he's something. When the money is down and you got to have it, I always trust Rajon Rondo. I just do. He always comes.
Yeah, he had no steals in game 6.
Crazy. Dude was nice. But game 6, though, of course, you know, it will definitely be known forever in my memory for the Joe Kim Noah dunk. I don't remember a feeling or reaction like that since the Bulls are winning championships. I'm speaking for me, like the crowd and the way they reacted was reminiscent of that. It was reminiscent of Jordan hitting those 6 threes. It was reminiscent of Steve Kerr hitting that jumper. It was reminiscent of Scottie dunking on Ewing. Like all those things.
Absolutely.
It felt like that when that crowd, I mean, exploded.
Just in that one play, it was so crazy what happened with Joakim Noah. Because in that one play, a bunch of things happened and a bunch of really important things happened. First of all, he steals it. A center out at the top of the key, you know, defending Paul Pierce is one thing. But he makes the steal. He goes coast to coast. Something else the center is, you're not used to a center doing. He dunks it on Paul Pierce, who is arguably their best player. Okay, that's Paul Pierce. That's the truth. He fouls him out of the game in the third overtime.
Right.
And then he hit the free throw to give them the lead to complete the and one as a young player, like with all that pressure on him and not being a great free throw shooter. He did all of those things, man. And over the sound of Kevin Harlan, you know, losing his mind. So all that happened. And then just watching the eruption of the entire stadium, man. Like that feeling I haven't had like since the 90s. Like I haven't felt that, you know what I'm saying? Since, like, I remember that feeling of joy, just of excitement. And then even of Joakim Noah after that game, because I believe it was 128, 125, or 126 or something like that. Final
one
score.
Point game, 120, 128, 127.
Okay. So even with that and playing 3 overtimes, Joakim Noah's still running up and down the court, high-fiving fans after the game. So
Go ahead. You go ahead.
So after that, like, just to have that kind of energy and that kind of love and just have that kind of excitement, it just felt like the championship game for the Bulls for that. Because going into game 7, I don't know how y'all felt, but going into game 7, I didn't have, like, real high hopes that we were going to win game 7 at all. So what happened, you know, I kind of was like, okay, yeah, that happened. But, you know, what an incredible series. And this team fought and they did way more than I thought that they were going to do. And this looks like the greatest, not just first round series of all time, but like the greatest series of all time. In basketball, I should say. But, yeah, it's just that game 6, man, just felt like everything for that team that year. Like that was the game for us. That was the one. Like we hang our hat on that game. It's called The Dunk. Like, that's all I think of it as, is The Dunk by Joakim Noah. So.
Do you really? I think of it as The Steal.
Okay, that's fair. I more equate it as The Dunk because of what all that dunk brought. You know what I'm saying? Just him going up and dunking on Paul Pierce and getting the and one. And the timing, even the timing of the whistle, man, it was like music, man. Even the timing of the whistle when he makes the dunk, like, it was perfect. And he just goes crazy. He's bumping chest. Like, all that stuff happened, man. And yeah, it definitely starts with the steal. But man, that dunk, when that whistle blew and he went up, man, I mean, I completely lost it. I mean, I was going insane. And like I said, to hit that free throw, man, just showed you how clutch and how much heart he has, you know what I'm saying? Because he was a young guy. He was 22
at that time. That was definitely the cherry on top for the whole series for the Bulls.
Yeah, straight up.
So let me ask you guys if you experienced this the way that I did. Because, you know, we came to know Joe Kim as a guy who could sort of handle the ball, who could play at the top of the key, you could run the offense through him. But that was not who he was at that point.
No.
No way. Not even remotely.
So tell me if this is what you experienced. And obviously that play takes 2 seconds maybe from steal to dunk. So this is all in your brain happening very quickly. But he gets the steal. And he gets that first dribble. And my immediate thought, obviously, other than like, awesome, he got the steal, was, okay, where's the trailer?
Yeah.
And I'm looking at the floor. Maybe Derek was behind him. And I'm looking at the floor and I'm wondering, who's he going to pass this off to? And then I started thinking it would be really cool if he were the kind of person who were able to dribble the length of the floor and dunk it. That would be great, but unfortunately he doesn't have that skill set and he's going to dribble off of his foot. So I'm hoping that there's a pass coming. And then it was like, then he was at half court. Okay, I'm watching it right now. John Sammons was right behind him. Yeah. And he was at half court. I'm like, okay, all right, he's still going. Maybe he'll keep trying. That'd be nice, just keep trying. But I'm a little worried here. And then he got to, like, the foul line. And I was like, okay, this would be a real easy dump off to Fish Sticks. Like, let's just do it right here. And then I see him go up, and I'm like, all right, cool. He's, you know, Pierce is going to nail him. He's going to go to the line for a pair. Okay, he makes one of two. That'll work. And then he completes it. And it was like I went through this whole evolution of my understanding of Joe Kim Noah in, whatever, 2 seconds. And from that point on, I remember early the next season seeing it looked like just a change in him offensively where he felt more comfortable moving the ball, dribbling the ball. Is that how you guys felt when you saw him make that steal? Like, uh-oh, what's going to happen?
For me, it was – my thought was Paul Pierce is not that fast. I didn't have the whole. I hope there's a trailer. I agree with you. I agree with you. Everything else was can he dribble all the way to the rim? But my thought was, I think he's actually faster than Paul Pierce. He could get to the rim. Can he beat Paul Pierce? I think he can. And it'd be cool if he could finish with a dunk.
So you had faith.
I had faith.
Interesting.
Because Paul Pierce was not a fleet of foot. So
right.
Yeah. So that's my main thing. Don't get caught behind. Don't get fouled. Get the shot off.
That makes sense. And it's funny that photo, and I tweeted it, of Noah beginning the steal, and it's basically from the baseline looking ahead at him. Paul Pierce looks just goofy. Like his elbows are coming out.
Yeah, just watching them now.
Yeah. Well, he also just knew that.
He baited him. He was on Scow. He jumped off Scow. And then he knew.
Because Pierce had been living around the foul line.
Yeah.
And so he knew he's either going to do that, and then he saw him passing it to Scalabrine. But I just pulled up somebody that night. Like, this was still kind of early in the world of YouTube and like turning something. This is basically turning something into a meme. This mm-hmm. was when the Where Amazing Happens, where it was that ad campaign for the NBA.
Yeah.
Someone took the steal that day.
Yeah.
Anyways, they made it into this 30-second Where Amazing Happens commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And it ends with Doc Rivers just like bending over, just disgust. And then it said, "See you in Boston." And somebody made that and uploaded it that like that night.
That's crazy.
Like, you know what I remember?
There's no word for that, but he made a meme. I mean, that's what it was.
Yeah.
That play is almost personal for me because I remember the next memory I have, really, from that steal, dunk, and foul by Pierce is later that summer, In I think it was July, I was able to play at the Berto Center in a fantasy camp. A one-day fantasy camp with Jakeem Noah and Bill Wennington. And I got there about 4 hours early. Nobody was at the place but me and the janitor who opened it up. And I'm shooting shots in an empty gym. And the first guy to show up is Jakeem Noah. Nobody else. None of the guests. No one else but Jakeem. And I see him and I walk over to him. And I just introduce myself and I go, I got to tell you, man, when you stole that ball from Pierce and you dunked it, and I mean, when you stole that ball and drove all the way and dunked it and were followed by Pierce, that was one of the best moments of my life as a Bulls fan. And he just smiles at me and he sticks out his hand and we, like, you know, shook hands and then we hugged each other alone in the Berto Center. One of the top three moments of my life, probably, as a fan, to experience that with Jakeem Noah. Talk about one of the coolest guys in the world. And I wasn't, looking back, I remember game one and two, I was not happy with Jakeem and at all, and Thomas. I thought they played terrible on the boards, and they were completely manhandled. But, man, from that moment forward, he became a legend, and he really developed into, it's amazing, he developed into a first-team All-NBA. It's insane that he went from where he was to that.
Yeah, and the team was just like, you know, today's point about, you know, that dunk meaning so much, because at the time, you knew you had a superstar. And then you had these players that no one thought were going to be, I don't think I thought Ben Gordon was going to be this super clutch guy dropping 35 points in the playoffs. So you just felt so confident about the years going forward. And even though those games were great, even though that we lost them, you just felt like the Bulls are up and coming. So you accepted the loss a little better, you know?
Yeah,
that's true. That's what I'm saying. That's why game seven, it was just like, okay, this is game seven. They gave me everything I thought that they were going to give me. You know what I'm saying? And
on the road, too. He wasn't going to win at home.
Three overtime game, you know, going against these guys. Like, whatever y'all give me in game seven, I'm completely happy with, because you've already exceeded all my expectations. So,
Do you guys remember the final big play of game six, though? It wasn't Noah Steele.
Was it Heinrich's missed layup?
Oh, it was Rose, wasn't it? Something? Yeah.
No, Heinrich's missed layup. That was terrible.
Horrific.
And I like that. That's the one thing that's managed to remain with you.
I'm watching now, as I recall, I see a Rose block.
It was the block.
It was the block on Rondo. It was the fadeaway.
Did that block occur right after the missed layup? I think it did.
It was after the missed layup, yep.
Yeah, if the Bulls would have lost that game, that would have ended Kirk's love affair with Chicago. That was insane.
Oh, no, he would miss many more layups.
Yeah, for real. Seriously.
And free throws.
You know, and that's why I kind of look back at that series. Game 7 to me was so anticlimactic, and I just didn't think I didn't think that game was a well-played game. Seemed like as the series went on, it got a little worse as far as quality of basketball. And that Game 7, I thought, was probably the worst game of the series. Did you guys feel the same way?
I mean, as I think Jack, you brought out, was that at some point it became kind of goonish. I remember Rondo got away with a lot of stuff. And when you play a team this long and this tough, you kind of know what you're going to do on the floor. And it just becomes like a game where it becomes more physical. Versus pure basketball, so it became a lot of physical, a lot more physical, and I don't know, it wasn't a pretty game. Yeah, it was a pretty game. I think at the end, you know, in basketball, generally the better team wins with the better players, especially if you're in your home floor.
Yeah, no, that wasn't that. I agree with everything you guys have said. It definitely felt like, okay, I can handle. I mean, I can handle a loss, like. It won't be the end of the world.
Right.
And it was ugly. But, I mean, you have to think, all right, at that point, this isn't just the seventh game. They, at that point, had played, let's see, one, two, three, four, five, six. They'd played seven overtimes at that point. Mm-hmm. So this is their seventh game plus seven overtimes. Both of these teams are playing seven or eight man rotations. Bulls were playing seven man rotations. It was basically that whole series was Ben, Derek, Fishsticks, Noah, Tyrus, Kirk, and Brad Miller. That was it. So these guys, yeah, it was going to get goonish. It was going to get a little, you know, going to get a little ugly. Ben in that game went 7 of 23. had 33 points. He was perfect, 15-15 from the line, but 7 of 23. Sammons was 3 of 12. Derek didn't get to the foul line the whole game. Rondo, 2 of 8. You know, it was dragging. But, God, what? I mean, don't you just smile just even thinking about it?
Yes. I got a smile on my face while you're sitting there talking about it, man. Just I remember just all of those feelings, man. Like I said about game one and even game six, man. And even you bringing back the memories of game five and helping me remember that. Like, I remember all those things. And yeah, it was just such a great feeling, you know, because it was so unexpected, and it got you even more excited for the next year because you just wanted to have a good showing. That's what you want as a young team, you know, to have a good showing in the playoffs against an elite team so you can use it as a building block. Like, you can, even when Jordan dropped 63 in the Garden, they got swept that series, but you still felt like, oh man, okay, we coming, you know, we're on the way to something. So that's how it felt for me. Like, okay, man, we're on our way to something. Like, we found out about these players that we had. We found out about Derrick Rose. We found out about Noah. You know what I mean? We found out Vinny can't coach. Like, we found out a lot of things, you know, and it just brought clarity, you know what I'm saying, to the Bulls for a lot of fans, man. And so I'm very appreciative of that first round.
Final thoughts about that team and how you, now that 10 years – you know, 10 years ago, you know, obviously Gordon left that year, and the Bulls were close, though. I mean, they got Taj later that summer, but they did take a step back with Gordon's departure. How do you look back at that 08-09 team, and do you think if Gordon would have stayed, what do you think would have been different?
Oh, man. If he would have stayed. I remember being pleasantly surprised of how good Simons was and Brad Miller. Yeah. Just like, oh, he's clutch too? Oh, okay. Wow. And Ben Gordon. Man, I don't know, man. Because you don't know. It's almost one of the things where, like, if it's meant to be, you know, it's one of the things where, you know, you say, what happened to the Bulls coaches after they left the Bulls? You know, so you kind of wonder, you know, would the same thing kind of happen if he stayed with the Bulls? Because he didn't do much after he left the Bulls. So I don't know.
Well, it's also hard to say because – I usually don't like doing that kind of game because all I'm thinking is, like, everything that happened after that. Like, if he saves and we play well, does Vinny Del Negro keep his job? And then we don't get, you know, Tibbs, you know what I'm saying? And we don't move forward as a team that way. Like, there are a lot of ifs about that. So, I don't know. I wanted Ben to stay, of course. I definitely wanted Ben to stay. But, you know, I mean, you can't argue with the results of what happened to the team after he left. You know what I mean? And just how good they became. Mm-hmm. But wanting him to stay and getting rid of him, I was not on board for any of that. No, I wanted him to stay. And
oh, no.
They still would have been a good team. Absolutely a good team, Mitchell. No question.
Yeah. Real quick, with today, I always say that when I say Dave, I love a guy who could create his own shot.
Yes. Yeah.
He don't give up those guys. They gave him up.
And I mean,
they gave him up. But,
yeah, yeah, he went and got his check. You know, they didn't want to give him his money, and he went and got his money. But Ben was incredible, man. Come on, Ben was incredible.
No doubt.
I mean, for me, I kind of thought Ben had to go because the future was Derek. And the way that Ben played, he needed to shoot, he needed the ball. And it was just like, I remember watching game seven, I was like, well, this was a nice farewell for Ben because he had 33 points and we lost. You've got the future of the franchise. Can't get to the foul line, but he shot 50% from the floor that game. I knew that was it. I mean, how do I look back? When I look back at that 09 team, that's the birth of the greatest run of Bulls basketball after Jordan and Pippen.